Well, today we have a chance to learn a little bit about one of the most iconic characters in rock and roll, a guy who loved the blues so much that Ray Charles considered his influence on Joe Cocker to be a real tribute, and was pleased that Joe Cocker was such a huge fan of his that he would want to sing in a very similar style. But for most people who were sighted, what really made Joe Cocker unique were his onstage mannerisms as he sang. Here to talk about this iconic artist, Joe Cocker, we have Mark Bago. His new book is With a Lot of Help from His Friends, and it's available online and in bookstores everywhere. Most of us don't know very much about Joe Cocker, except for the fact that he kind of burst on the scene. He had been building his career quietly in garage bands and so forth for years, right?
He grew up in Sheffield, England, had a band that literally did rehearse in his parents' garage, and played, you know, clubs and what have you. And in fact, was one of the scenes in my book is him at a Battle of the Bands with the Rolling Stones, and he ends up with the best reviews in the newspaper the next day. So, you know, I think that whole scenario is just so brilliant of what a hotbed of music it must have been back then. Mm-hmm. What happened was 1963, 1964 came around. The Beatles became everything, and every record label wanted a band like the Beatles. And so it was a ripe time for Joe to launch his band and his musical career.
Now, interestingly enough, he has some success, and then he gets tired of it and doesn't do much for about a year. This is kind of a pattern that goes through most of his life, doesn't it? That he'll be excited about a project, and he'll get into it, and he'll work his very hardest, but then when he's ready for it to be over, that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, almost, you know, career suicide. Here in 1969, August of 1969, he performs at Woodstock, blows everybody away who's there, the 500,000 people who are there, just amazed by it. The Woodstock album comes out, the Woodstock documentary comes out, Joe is like suddenly this big star, the Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour happens, Leon Russell puts together this whole rock and roll circus of a tour for Joe. That's a big success. The album comes out, the documentary comes out. Where's Joe? Joe's on his parents' sofa drunk for 2 years, depressed. Like, here he, you know, this kind of stardom, most, you know, singers or performers would be like, oh my God, let's put together another tour. You know, we got to make hay while the sun shines here. Joe instead, well, I don't feel like it. I'm depressed. So then when he does his big comeback, no one cares. Time has moved on. The music scene has changed.
Right.
And it wasn't until he bumbles into the song, You Are So Beautiful, that he's back on the charts again and happening. But, you know, it's so funny to read a book or to write a book about someone who is so talented, so driven, and yet so depressed about
yeah.
it. I mean, he had so much yeah. to celebrate.
The fascinating thing to me is that, like most people, I didn't really understand why he sang the way he did. That is to say, with the hand gestures that just seemed like he was kind of losing his mind or something.
I remember Absolutely.
I watched Saturday Night Live from the very inception, and I remember when John Belushi came out and did a spot-on impersonation of Joe Cocker Joe Cocker is singing on the show. And it was extraordinary. And you addressed this little portion of Joe's life in the book, I thought, oh gosh, he's going to be furious because he's making fun of his kind of spastic movements and everything. But according to your book, that isn't the way he felt about it at all.
No, Joe was actually flattered by it. His friends would go, look at this video of you're going to get so pissed off. He goes, oh my God, this guy's great, because Belushi had done an imitation of Joe on a Lemmings movie or like a TV special.
Right.
And so he kind of had been practicing the whole Joe Cocker spastic choreography. And, you know, everyone, I hope, goes to YouTube and looks at this little clip, because the look on Joe's face, once John Belushi starts imitating him, like, you know, like a mirror image behind him, drunken and crazy and everything, the look on Joe's face is like, what the hell is this? Yet it's a classic moment, and he was actually flattered by the whole thing.
Yeah, he said that that he'd been having some throat problems. No big surprise considering he was a two-pack-a-day smoker minimum, plus a lot of alcohol. Belushi took him to his own voice doctor and everything, and was very meek and humble around him. And I thought, well, isn't that lovely? That's a wonderful reflection on both of these people that most people only know from their public persona.
Exactly, exactly. And as you said, you would think they would be worst enemies. They ended up best friends. It's just kind of crazy how things come about. And Joe, talk about worst enemy. I mean, he had a show at the Roxy in L.A. that was going to be his big comeback. He had the song You Are So Beautiful. It was on the charts. Everyone was happy with him. He gets on stage at the Roxy. Well, they didn't know before the curtain went up. Some friend of his showed up with a bunch of cocaine and booze. Joe gets through one song. Jimmy Webb is on stage starting The Moon's a Harsh Mistress, which Joe had just recorded. Joe completely lost it and completely just collapsed like a Raggedy Andy doll right on stage. They put the curtain down, and that was the end. He just completely screwing up his career right and left. And the next thing you know, he gets a chance to sing with Jennifer Warnes on Up Where We Belong, the biggest song of his entire career. I mean, it's amazing how he had all these second chances in his career right up to the very end.
It's amazing because, for example, you were talking about the Mad Dogs and Englishmen tour, and I remember the album when it came out and thinking, good grief, look at the people that are on this album. All these people that later became big stars in their own right really got their start, or at least their public awareness during that tour. Rita Coolidge, no one outside of the music business had ever heard of Leon Russell until then. He becomes a major thing. And
exactly.
And once again, the same thing happens, that at first Joe Cocker says, oh, this is great. This guy's doing all this work. He's making me look good. I'll give him a chance to have some solo stuff in this enormous concert. But something changes, and after a while he decides that maybe Leon Russell is just out for himself and using him, and he turns against him.
It's really a sad story in a way. I was very honored by the fact that I was flown to Tulsa a couple weeks ago to launch this book, to go to Leon Russell's recording studio, The Church, which has been restored and is like a museum to Leon Russell. Anyone who goes to Tulsa should go to The Church and see this. But there's a display of all the Mad Dogs and Englishmen memorabilia, and Leon loved Joe Cocker. And I think it was people, I was told that it was people on the tour going, you know, Joe, he's stealing all your thunder, blah, 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 blah. No, he was setting up Joe to be an even bigger star and, you know, taking some of the weight off of Joe so Joe could just be the star.
Yeah.
And it's so unfortunate that they couldn't have gone on together as friends. Now, another redemption thing that happened in Joe's life is towards the end of his career, he and Leon played a show in Tulsa and eventually kind of buried the hatchet a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's some amazing music they could have made together.
Yeah. Late in life, middle age, Joe Cocker falls in love, gets married, eventually starts to realize that the booze and the cigarettes are bad for him, and eventually gives them both up, but the damage is done. He dies at a relatively young age, although not for a rock and roller who is as sincere about his partying as he was. But what an incredible talent. What a very unique individual. And you do a really wonderful job in giving us all these different facets of his life. That I remember hearing about Cocker having the Kim CD that he came out with later toward the end of his life. Read some things here and there that said he had kind of a religious revival and everything, and I thought, isn't this amazing? This guy would be completely turned in a completely different direction by the time that he died.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and you know, the credit really goes to his wife, Pam Baker, who one day gave a dinner party. They were hosting a bunch of their friends at their place in Colorado. Joe comes down to the table just completely drunk out of his mind. Pam marches him upstairs and says, look, it's either the booze or me. You make a choice. And he absolutely stopped cold turkey. And the last 10 years of his life, his happiness at home in Colorado was growing tomatoes and walking with his dog out in the hills. And the tomato growing is something he inherited from his dad. His dad always had prized tomatoes.
Right.
So it was kind of, you know, interesting that Joe ends up, you know, reflecting where his roots are from and growing tomatoes in Colorado.
Amazing, amazing. We've been talking to Mark Bago. His new book is Joe Cocker with a lot of help from his friends. Introduction by Woodstock legend Melanie, which is fun.
I love Melanie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I know that you've probably got another interview behind me, and you've been doing them all morning, but I'm really glad I got a chance to talk to you. It's really a terrific book, and I read a lot of books, so it's really great to get to enjoy them as much as I did this one.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and it's great talking to you as well.
All right. You take care, Mark. And next book, let's do this again.
Okay. I love it. You're on.
Okay. We've been talking to Mark Bago, the author of 68 published books on rock and roll and show business. He's been referred to by the Publishers Weekly as the Prince of Pop Music Bios, has had multiple New York Times bestsellers, and continues to examine the lives of the biggest rock stars in the business, a list which includes Elton John, and his newest on Joe Cocker with a lot of help from his friends. For WTBF, I'm Doc Kirby.